about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains
isn't
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. You don't have any idea why
we're
doing
so smart.
Most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal. How is it that people are able to conceptualize the knowledge of other people?
He's Art Markman.
He's Bob Duke.
And she's Rebecca McEnroy.
And this is Two Guys on Your Head.
Today, understanding theory of mind.
Theory of mind has to do with actually theory of others' minds, maybe is a way to say it.
Yeah.
So if we, as most normal functioning humans do, have a theory of mind, I recognize the fact that what I perceive and what I think may be different from what you perceive and what you think. And the ability to separate those things is what people refer to as a theory of mind.
For example, Bob would not have just given that definition if he believed that everyone knew what that was as a matter of course. Because to even begin to say something to someone else, you have to have some sense of what they know and what they don't know in order to be able to have a conversation. So theory of mind is central for us to be able to interact with people in the first place.
Right. And, you know, experiments to sort of test this thing with children, for example, children watch a scenario done by puppets or on a computer screen or something. And one of the characters in the scenario would put a toy in a box, for example, would leave the room. Another character comes in, takes the toy out of the box, puts it in a different box, right? Then leaves the room. Then the first character comes in and the child is asked, where will she look for the toy? Now, a child who is old enough that now they understand theory of mind will say that she will look for the toy where she put the toy, recognizing that she wasn't in the room when the second character moved the toy, so she must still think it's in the original box. And because she doesn't know what I know, right? Children who have not yet reached that point of maturity, that they have a theory of mind, will say she will look for it in the box where the second character placed it, because the child had observed that. So the child doesn't differentiate what I know from what that other character knows.
Yeah. So this idea of being able to model someone else's false beliefs is a really important part of demonstrating whether somebody has this theory of mind. But it turns out it's really effortful to be able to do that. And even adults screw it up all the time. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, people heard examples like the ones that Bob just gave with these simple false belief tasks. And they thought, well, kids are kind of stupid. And adults are smart, so adults get this thing kids don't.
Wrong on both counts, right?
And Buzz Kasar at Chicago did all this kind of cool stuff with stories told to adults. So, you tell this elaborate story about a guy. He asks his secretary for a recommendation for a restaurant because his parents are coming to town and he doesn't know where to take them. And she gives a recommendation. And then he and his parents go to this restaurant and they have a terrible meal. I mean, it's like the worst ever. And then he comes to work the next day and the secretary sends him an email, says, how was the restaurant? And he writes back, it was great, just great. And the question is, how does the secretary interpret that message? And college undergraduates, who presumably have a theory of mind, will consistently say she takes it sarcastically, mm-hmm. even though she couldn't possibly take it sarcastically if she didn't know that they had a terrible meal. But in a situation that's just slightly more elaborate than this kind of hidden toy situation, adults end up having difficulty keeping track of who knows what.
Right.
This is the foundation of the modern mystery novel.
Well, and something that we've said on a number of different occasions, brains are efficient, and another word for efficient is lazy. What all of that really suggests is how habit-driven our behavior is. I mean, we have ways of interacting, ways of behaving that are long practiced throughout our lifespan. And when we meet other people, it's understandable that we would initially try to apply those practiced ways of doing things with the expectation that they're going to work now as they've worked many times in the past.
And it's interesting, once we put in the effort to get to know a particular individual, we often end up applying what we know about that individual to other people who are like them.
Right.
So Susan Anderson, who's at NYU, does all this beautiful work on the influence of significant others in your life on the way that you interpret other people in the world. So if you meet someone who reminds you of your mother, you will actually start to make assumptions that they have all sorts of beliefs that are like your mother's and not just those few things that led you to make that comparison in the first place. And it's because presumably for people who are close to you in your life, you've gone through all of this effort to figure out what they like and what they don't like. So you then start applying that in all kinds of other places where it may or may not make sense. I mean, one of the reasons that we hold stereotypes is because it eases some of these processes like theory of mind.
Right.
So if I can treat all women or all men or all African Americans or all Asians or whatever as the same, it gives me this way of making assumptions about what they know and what they like and what they want that ease the process of interacting with people, even though it often brings exceedingly wrong information to bear.
There is a structural neurophysical explanation for that, right? Because when something that you experience, a person you experience, has enough features that remind you of your mother memories are activated, right? The whole mother memory is activated. The constellation of stuff that is your mother is activated. So it's understandable that you might not be able to parse out, well, which of the things that are similar am I responding to, and sort of start to conflate other things that have nothing to do with this person that I've just met, because all my mother stuff has been activated. Right.
Right? Yeah, the relationships that you have with your parents and your siblings growing up lay down a huge number of interaction patterns that you end up carrying on throughout the rest of your life. And so to the extent that you don't realize that you are carrying aspects of this theory of mind that you developed in childhood in order to be able to navigate your family and your close friends as kids, it can be very difficult to realize that you may be doing things unintentionally in your close relationships as an adult that are actually getting in the way of effective communication.
Next week with Two Guys on Your Head, we'll kick off summer vacation by exploring psychological distance with Drs. Art Markman and Bob Duke. To check out this and other episodes of Two Guys and get more information on any of the topics we've discussed, go to KUT.org. We're also on iTunes and Twitter at the number 2 G-O-Y-H. Two Guys on Your Head is produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas, and supported by OBGYN North and Natural Beginning Birth Center. For KUT, I'm Rebecca McEnroy.